Michelle, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 28th, 2007. I'm sponsored and I have a home group, and thank you so much for having me. It really is a privilege and an honor, because I'm someone who has always suffered from a spiritual malady. I don't know that I've had alcoholism my entire life, but I've certainly suffered. And I can recall many times laying on the floor of my bedroom in fetal position, just hoping to God that this wouldn't be for nothing, hoping that there would be light at the end of the tunnel, that this couldn't just be, like, a huge mistake, you know, because I felt like a huge mistake. You know, I can remember being very angry and frustrated with God for making me feel the way that I felt and think the way that I thought for no good reason, because I didn't have anything traumatizing or necessarily, like, circumstantial to point to say that this is why I am the way I am, you know, which frustrated me and confused me, you know, because people were always asking me, even before I picked up a drink, what was wrong with me, what they could do to help me, how can we make you happy, because I was miserable. I was a miserable little kid. Didn't matter. I mean, my parents spoiled me rotten, you know, because I demanded it, and it just never worked. You know, Christmas was like the worst, you know, because they would really go all out, get me everything that they thought I wanted, and I would just be a spoiled little brat, you know, kicking and screaming because I was so miserable, you know, and it was my purpose in life to make you miserable too, you know, because I was frustrated because no one understood, you know, and I would look at my sister and my parents and we'd go to family outings and I would look around and I would just feel so alone, you know, even at school, I would watch other kids interact gracefully as I saw it and just make friends effortlessly, and I felt like completely incapable, like I had missed out on the handbook, you know, the guide for living. And needless to say, I needed a drink so badly. I needed a drink to cheer me up desperately. And for me, it started just kind of like inching my way towards the people who weren't asking what was wrong with me, who weren't concerned with why I wasn't smiling, because they weren't either. You know, the kids who weren't interested in staying at school all day because they hated it too. You know, and that was in middle school. You know, and I started finding the people who wanted to do what I wanted to do. You know, because I wanted anything to get me out of my head, anything, you know, and it was like before I drank, I would just, you know, skip school, sneak out, steal from my parents, stuff like that, just because it gave me a little rush. It made me feel like I didn't have to be in my head thinking about whatever was going on in there, you know, and needless to say, I found the kids who were smoking pot in the woods, skipping school, stuff like that, and my parents were very naive, so I kind of had the party house, you know, the place where everyone would kind of come and hang out. And we didn't even try to hide it. You know, we would just smoke weed in my basement, wouldn't open a window, nothing, you know, and I didn't even really like it, you know, but it was like for the first time I found a sense of like fellowship and camaraderie where I didn't have to like be so nervous or concerned with what you thought of me. Like we were there to do what we were doing, you know, and we got the results of doing that, and that was fun, you know, and that was, like, the closest I'd come to human connection, you know, up until that point, you know, because that's what it was. It was, like, this huge gaping hole between me and you, and I didn't understand it, you know, and it terrified me, and I couldn't feel it, and it was, like, the more I tried, the worse I felt, and the more lonely I became, you know, and when I finally discovered alcohol, because I did discover it, it was, like, my elixir. It was my cure. I was a freshman, you know, it was that, like, all the middle schools were kind of, like, ready to meet and greet, enter high school together, and I was really nervous. I was always nervous, but this was, like, really nerve-wracking, you know, and we went to this parental supervised party. Me and my best friend decided to drink on the way there. We had, like, been dabbling in it here and there, like, wine coolers, stuff like that, but I had never been drunk. And we filled two water bottles up with Bacardi 151, one for me, one for her. I was a whole, like, 85 pounds or whatever, and I chugged my water bottle, blacked out immediately, and a two-minute walk to the kid's house. I don't remember anything except telling my boyfriend of, like, 2 weeks that I loved him, you know, and coming to in the hospital. And hearing that my friend had almost died and that I had almost died. And, you know, aren't you nervous? Like, look what you did to your parents, all the stuff, the lectures, the looks of disappointment. and all I was concerned with was what people were going to think of me. I could not comprehend that I had just destroyed my reputation, that I had just destroyed any chance I had of, like, entering high school gracefully, you know, making a good impression, you know, because a second, I mean, I chased the relief that alcohol gave me very recklessly and desperately, you know, but a close second was that approval. I needed to feel like I belonged here. I needed you to like me. I needed people, you know, but I couldn't make that connection, you know, and that was the hopelessness in and of itself. And then my relationship with alcohol, I mean, I had that phenomenon of craving that night. You know I did, and I have conviction in that, that when I started, I couldn't stop, you know, because I had glimpses of meeting up with my boyfriend in the woods after I was already, like, in and out of blackout, stealing his beer from him, you know, and a normal person who was, like, already completely wasted, blacked out, I mean, that is, like, cue to stop. That is cue to slow down, stop, you're out of control. I can only imagine what that's like. I've never experienced that kind of control in regards to alcohol, but I mean, that desire to keep drinking once I start, I mean, I had that my first drunk, you know, and all the consequences that I had from that, they meant nothing to me. I mean, it was like 2 weeks of being grounded, and I was so restless and itchy, and I couldn't stand the thought of people being out having fun, creating memories, taking pictures, all this stuff without me. Like, I couldn't handle it. And I hated my parents. I felt like it was their fault. If they weren't setting these rules, I wouldn't be in trouble. Don't they understand? If they just let me have a looser rope, then I would do fine. You know, and I was so angry, and I couldn't take it anymore, and that's when I realized that I could just leave anyways. You know, because they'd always grounded me and tried to, like, they were very strict for a while, once they caught on. But I just did not care. I had no care or concern for how they felt or thought. You know, to me, they were the enemy. To me, they were, like, a roadblock in what I needed and wanted to do. You know, and that was, like, the beginning of me completely disregarding all the relationships in my life. You know, because even with my family, I felt nothing. You know, I felt nothing. You know, I was very ashamed of that for a long time because I didn't understand it. You know, it was like I knew logically I loved my parents. I knew it. I knew logically I loved my sister, but I had no idea how to show it. I had no idea how to act like it, you know, because the fear of just existing was too unbearable, you know, and I couldn't talk to people. I couldn't look you in the eye. I couldn't explain to you why I did the things that I did, you know, and as I kept drinking and kind of getting into more and more trouble, because I did, I mean, I never put up a front like I was doing well, you know, I'm somebody who's very belligerent, I'm somebody who humiliates themselves, I don't have, like, even good-looking friends, you know what I mean, I go straight to the bottom because that's where I'm comfortable, and I would come home, you know, usually from being gone for days at a time, walking in the door drunk or just hungover or looking horrible. My parents would just, like, corner me and just ask me what was wrong, you know, because they genuinely wanted to know. They genuinely wanted to help me, you know, and I would be like, F you, Mom, you know, and go slam the door and go my room. But then in my room, I would really kind of reflect on that and, like, ask myself, what is wrong with me, you know, and I had no idea. You know, I was more confused than they were as to what to do with me. You know, and that anger and frustration just kind of built upon itself the more and more I drank and got trapped in that cycle. Because for me, I did kind of just drink on the weekends, then maybe like one weekday for a little while, you know, probably like 9 months, you know. But after that, it was like every opportunity, then seeking opportunity, then making more and more friends so that I had more and more opportunity. You know, and people never really knew what I was doing. You know, I was completely Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, because I would go out with these friends and I would be like happy-go-lucky party girl most of the time. Every now and then I would go in the kitchen with a butcher knife making a huge scene about how I was going to kill myself. But most of the time I was like fun, there for the party, you know, getting the relief, you know, feeling a part of. And then I would get dropped off and go to my parents' house and just unleash the fury, you know, unleash the frustration, the resentment, the despair, you know, on them, you know, because I've always been selfish and self-centered, You know, if I feel as though I can take advantage of you, I will. You know, especially if it's going to get me drunk, if it's going to help me live the way that I need to live so that I don't have to blow my head off. You know, because before I found alcohol is all I wanted to do. You know, I wanted to blow my head off, and it was like in the nick of time, alcohol saved my life, you know, and I didn't have to because I found something that might work, you know, and I was very, very manipulative in my drinking. You know, people would be like winding down for the night or running out or kind of limiting how much alcohol was at the party, and I would start to panic. I would hear about, and I'd be assessing and calculating how much was going to be for me, what I was going to do when I started sobering up, and the fear and the instincts for survival and staying drunk would kick in, and I would be on my phone texting other people to come pick me up, making plans for all night, because I could not just let myself sober up. That was like my ultimate hell. You know, hearing that there was not going to be enough, or that other people weren't as concerned or making alcohol a priority, I mean, instant fear, instant terror, anxiety, you know, and people, I mean, even my closest friends didn't know a thing about me. They didn't know a thing about what I did, where I went, who I knew, because even one of my friends now, who I've since made amends to, she was one of my actually genuine good friends throughout my drinking, even before that. You know, I'll tell her stories now, and her mind is just blown. You know, she knew that I was a wreck, but she didn't know, you know, the half of it. You know, because I protected my life, my drinking life, very desperately, because I needed to. You know, and I felt like I couldn't tell anyone. I felt like no one understood. And it almost was just the norm. You know, I had started getting, like, kicked out of my parents' house because, like I said, when I would go there, I was a horror. You know, I would treat them horribly. I would say things that I can't even, like, comprehend saying to anyone now. You know, I would slip notes under my parents' door telling them that I hate them, it's their fault, I hope you die. You know, they were locking their bedroom doors because they were terrified. They were absolutely terrified of me. They had removed my bedroom door because they were worried for me, because every time I was in there by myself for too long, weird things happened. Things broke. I came out bloody, screaming, crying, taking me to the psych ward. You know, I couldn't be trusted, you know, even to be left alone, you know, and they felt unsafe for everyone, you know, and my younger sister, she wouldn't speak to me. You know, she didn't drink. She was about a year and a half younger than me, you know, and she was terrified of me. You know, I would come home drunk sometimes and sneak into her bed. I don't know why. I was lonely. You know, I would sneak into her bed and just, like, sleep there with her, and she would, and we wouldn't even talk, you know, and she would see me scream at my mom, hit my mom, push her into walls, try to push her downstairs. She would see me and my father get in physical altercations. She would see me disappear for days at a time. She didn't know what I was doing except for hearsay, you know, because we were kind of close in age. She would hear stories. We might be at the same place, unfortunately, you know, and she was terrified. And I couldn't even care. I didn't even know, honestly, until I got sober, the kind of damage I was creating in my home. You know, I couldn't even comprehend it because I felt very, very entitled and justified to the way that I lived. I felt like you would too. Like, I must be an alien. I must be crazy. How do you not live like this? I'm the free one. I'm living the dream. I found that doing whatever you want is the closest I get to feeling better. You know, and I really believed that, and I lived like that. You know, but unfortunately, like I said, my parents had kicked me out because I couldn't be trusted, and I started having to do things to drink the way that I needed to drink that I would have never imagined myself doing, you know, because I was like 16, 17 years old, was incapable of working, incapable of showing up to school. I had dropped out, and I was incapable of friendships. I mean, as a girlfriend, I was completely untrustworthy. You know, so I would find these boys who were interested in what I had to offer, and I was interested in what they had to offer, you know, and it never once, while I was drunk, felt like an issue, but the problem was I would start to sober up, or I wouldn't sleep at all and just be lying there, and the reality of my life would start to set in, you know, and the disgust and the incomprehensible demoralization that the book talks about would just be so overwhelming. You know, and I couldn't take enough showers. I couldn't throw up enough. you know, to make that go away. And I couldn't look at myself in the eyes, you know, because I had become accustomed to consequences, you know, to, like, getting in trouble, getting arrested, dropping out of school. You know, it was easy to lower my standards, very easy. But when I had nothing left on the inside to sacrifice, I mean, I didn't know what to do, you know. And I can remember very vividly staying at this guy's house, same deal, you know, and he had been trying to force himself upon me all night, and I had been fighting him off all night, and he had finally passed out, and I was just laying there looking outside, seeing the sun come up and the birds chirping, hearing his parents upstairs getting ready for work to go out, and I just felt like, okay, this is it, you know, and I felt like, this is fine, you know, this is just what I have to do, you know, and it was like this eerie kind of like acceptance, you know, that I was never going to be like those people upstairs getting ready for work, that this was never going to get better, you know, that I was going to make the most of this, you know, and that this was okay, you know, and I hated myself desperately at the same time, you know, but I couldn't comprehend any other way. It was like any other way of living that I was living was like not even on my radar, you know. I couldn't comprehend it, I couldn't imagine it, and I couldn't dream it, you know, but I did pray, you know. I prayed many times throughout my drinking, just kind of desperate, like shots in the dark, like, please, if you're there, help me. Please, if you're there, this can't be real. This cannot be for nothing, like I'd said in the beginning. I mean, I used to sleep with a bottle of bleach under my bed, because just hoping one night I would get the guts to chug it, you know. And I remember one night, like, holding it in my hand, ready to plug my nose and just go, you know. But I remember having this overwhelming sensation, like, don't. Like, it will change, you know. Like, this won't be for nothing. And I held on to that for, like, the rest of my drinking, you know, because it was so overwhelming and powerful, and I had never felt like anything was there, ever, you know. But I kind of had this moment where, like, maybe, just maybe, you know, and as I started to drown that out throughout my drinking, I think that's kind of fundamental idea of God that I think we all have, you know, that was there, you know, no matter how badly I tried to outrun it, outdrink it, you know, because what had happened was I hated myself so desperately, and I couldn't comprehend any other way of living, but the fight was being, like, ripped out of me. I mean, I couldn't even, like, fight for it anymore. It was like if I had gotten hit by a bus, it would have just been, like, the most glorious nap of my life. You know, I would have welcomed that so desperately, and, you know, but I still always kind of had this feeling, like, please, you know, and I would still pray sometimes and just, like, open up every now and then to somebody, you know, and no one understood, but I didn't know what else to do. And I had gone to therapists and psychiatrists and all these well-meaning people, and I would try to, like, tell them the best I could what was actually wrong with me without indulging too much information, because I knew without a doubt that I was insane. I knew without a doubt that I was crazy. My biggest fear was that I was, like, on the verge of complete mental illness, like, schizophrenic, no coming back, sorry. You know, that's how I felt. Like, at any given moment, I was just going to snap, never come back. You know, because the drinking, the way that I was drinking, never really, like, resonated as maybe the root of my troubles. You know, that my drinking was an actual problem. You know, I felt like I was crazy. Nobody had really documented this kind of crazy before. You know, so I could never really be too honest, but I tried to be somewhat honest because I wanted help. You know, even in my, like, worst moments, I was like, if you had come in and saved me, I would have been very grateful, you know, but it didn't seem plausible, you know. And the more that I had to kind of let go of fighting for this way of life that I thought I so desperately wanted, to do whatever I wanted, because the alcohol wasn't really doing what it did in the beginning anymore. I mean, I could drink as much as I could humanly consume, and my head would be just crystal clear. You know, like, I was sober, telling me I was an idiot, that I was ugly, that I was stupid, no one likes you. Remember when you did this to your mom? Remember that time you had this job and you didn't show up? You know, and just reminding me of all these things that happened. You know, the same kind of, like, thoughts I would have sobering up, you know, and it was horrible. It was horrible because I wasn't getting, like, the relief that I used to get anymore, you know. But by this point, I was, like, physically dependent on alcohol. I mean, I thought I was just really anxious. I felt that I was just having a lot of panic attacks, that I was really nervous and jittery. But really, I was, like, detoxing from alcohol, you know, and that's why I started drinking during the day. You know, but I never really, like, put that together. I couldn't, like, connect those dots, you know, because my alcoholism was a lot more intelligent than I am, unfortunately, you know, and I didn't even know that I was protecting my drinking, you know, with all these delusions and this, like, idea that somehow this is normal, you know. But I think a higher power started to kind of creep in, you know. It was like I would trade a little bit of fight, you know, for a little bit of help every now and then, and things started happening that were, like, beyond me, you know. I was not somebody who would let anyone in, you know. I wanted you in so badly, but I didn't know how. I had no ability to connect with you. You know, relationships with other people were completely baffling and mind-blowing, you know, but I started to kind of, like, put myself in positions where I was getting help. Like, I remember I had gone to Pennsylvania for a weekend with some friends because I thought I was going to be able to drink as much as I wanted because this girl was at college, and on the way up there, there was this one beer in this backpack, and I was with two normal drinkers, and I was like, you don't need that beer, Michelle. Don't even worry about that beer. You're about to go to this girl's house, drink as much as you like all weekend. You don't need it. But I could not get it out of my head, and the obsession was just, like, driving me insane. I had to lay on the back of the seat. I was sweating. My thoughts were racing. I couldn't get this one beer out of my head, and I knew this beer is not going to get me drunk. This one beer is going to do nothing for me, you know, but I couldn't help it, and I just, like, felt really defeated, reached in there, chugged this beer as fast as I could, and felt like I could breathe. I felt like I can make it to Pennsylvania, you know, and I remember my friends looking back at me like, you're crazy, you know, why do you need it? We're driving, it's daytime, why are you drinking a beer in our car, you know, but I needed it. And that was confusing, you know, because that was my first experience with really seeing my relationship with alcohol, you know, because I had always kind of disguised it as, like, just crazy, like, general craziness, you know, but this time it was, like, I'm obsessing for a drink, you know, and that blew my mind, and I started to kind of, like, pick up on my relationship with drinking, you know, and that weekend in Pennsylvania, I was like, okay, we're going to control your drinking. We're going to just try to drink normally, try to drink with everyone else instead of, like, at everyone else, you know, or out drink everyone else, you know. So I tried it. I tried to just have, like, a few shots, pace myself, have a couple beers, play some games, be social, and it was the worst weekend of my life. I mean, all I remember is people screaming at me. I ended up at her neighbor's house that she didn't even know, sleeping on his couch, you know, finding a wine bottle somewhere, robbing him of his wine bottle, bringing it back over, and it was a mess, you know. And I remember the next day just being like, what happened? Like, what happened? Like, I couldn't even recall, like, trying to control it after that decision to try to control it. You know, and it was just so confusing, and it kind of set the ball for me to, like, really be aware of my drinking and kind of, like, because I was also physically deteriorating. I mean, at that time, my diet was milk and Tums and alcohol because I couldn't eat anything else, you know, nor was I interested in eating anything else, you know, and I knew I was, like, sick. I had a seizure, too, so I couldn't do my other substances that I also enjoyed every now and then to assist my drinking because my nervous system was, like, shot. I was having panic attacks and detoxing, you know, and I knew that something was horribly wrong, and I started to pick up on the drinking aspect of it. And for the next probably, like, 2 months, I tried to control my drinking. I tried to control it and enjoy it. And I had successfully went home, I think, once after having a few shots. But I wanted to shoot myself in the head. I was like, I might as well die because this is the worst feeling I've ever felt. And, like, the anxiety was just, like, too much, you know, and I seemed to humiliate myself even more. It was like the more I tried to control it, the worse it got. Like, the more I tried to, like, fix it, the bigger of a mess it became, you know, and it was so confusing, and I really started to, like, become aware of my powerlessness without knowing that that's what I was becoming aware of, you know. It was like, I couldn't, because I remember at my 18th birthday, you know, that was my big night to try to control my drinking, you know, because I wanted to be present for it, you know. But what happened instead was I went to, like, 3 different parties and made them all my birthday parties because I'm so selfish. I remember I went to one girl's birthday party whose birthday was the same day as mine, and I brought my own cake, put my name on it, and started telling people it was my birthday, you know, and people were getting me drunk, and I remember putting, drinking half a beer, putting liquor into my beer, which is my favorite thing to do, you know. And I remember just, like, not being able to pass out, not being able to just, like, be done, you know. And I stayed up all night in the McDonald's parking lot. I found some boy to buy me hash browns, and I was like, this is my birthday. This is my life. Like, I couldn't even, and I remember sitting there thinking, like, I can't comprehend turning 21. Like, picturing my future was just, like, impossible. Like, I knew in my gut that I wasn't going to live much longer. It was like I couldn't comprehend anything. You know, I had no goals, no dreams. I felt like my time was running out, that impending doom was always following me. You know, and I didn't know what to do, you know, and I knew that I couldn't drink normally either, you know. And I had gone out and disappeared again for a couple days or a week or something, came home, told my mom I was dying, that I needed help, and she had already met me at the emergency room at least, like, 8 times in the last, like, couple months, and they were done, you know. But for whatever reason, she had agreed to meet me there again, you know, and I got this time checked into the psych ward because I told them, honestly, that I was going to kill myself, that I was going to die, I was going to kill myself. I couldn't stop. I didn't know what to do, you know. And being in the psych ward had cleared me up and sobered me up for the first time in a while. I mean, I hadn't had a sober thought in so long, you know. And that problem for an alcoholic like me is, like, when I start to rebound, you know, and I feel physically well, I feel like, oh, you know, the sky is blue, the grass is green, you know, and I get, like, kind of, like, excited to just feel better, you know. I forget that the problem always starts in my head, you know, and I had been plotting my drink before I even left that place, you know, and I didn't know it. You know, my parents were excited for me to get out, like they usually were, because I was so hopeful, I was so optimistic every time, because I'd been in the psych ward before. I'd been to outpatients before. I'd done many things before to be different. I was going to change. It wasn't going to be like it was before. You know, my parents, they really believed me this time, you know, and I had a plan to go to outpatient and do all this stuff, and they were excited. They'd even repainted my room for me, got me a new comforter, you know, thinking that that would help for some reason. You know, but all it took was one person calling me at the right moment, and I was done. I mean, they said, do you want to come hang out at this person's house? I said, sure, why not? You know, I don't want to drink. I'm not going to drink. Don't let me drink. You know, and these were good friends. They weren't going to put alcohol in my face. They weren't going to make me do anything I don't want to do. You know, but the problem isn't other people. The problem is me. You know, I have no choice if I drink again. No choice. You know, and that's what I couldn't comprehend was, I mean, I went there and it was like, they didn't want me to drink. They didn't want me to. You know, they had seen what had happened. You know, they knew I just got out of the psych ward. You know, but I'm sneaky, I'm manipulative, I'll fight you, give me what I want. You know, and I got drunk that night. And the next day I was just like, my mind was just blown. You know, I couldn't understand what had just happened. And I was honest about it with my outpatient, and they made me go to an inpatient. You know, and that was my first actual inpatient rehab. And I felt so inadequate. I felt like I didn't belong there. I felt like these people were judging me. I felt like, because they were, honestly. They were like, you know, I didn't look like they looked. I mean, they were detoxing from heroin. They were like really old people, like detoxing from alcohol. I've been drinking for like 40 years. You know, I was like 18 years old. I wasn't detoxing. I just got out of the psych ward. I drank one more time, was an inpatient. I'd never smoked crack, never seen crack. I'd never shot heroin. I just didn't relate, you know, and alcoholism never crossed my mind, never once. I never even felt like it was presented to me as what might be wrong with me. You know, I felt like I just have maybe a problem getting messed up and partying too hard. You know, and when I drink, I get out of control. You know, but I couldn't understand it, you know, and I had to kind of, like, come to a conclusion on my own there, you know, of what was wrong with me. And I remember the last night before I got discharged, I said a prayer. I said, God, I don't know what is wrong with me. I don't know if I should be here. I don't know where to go when I leave. Please help me, you know. And this guy came in, and he told my story, you know, to a T, told my story. And it was just exactly what I needed, you know. And I said, okay, when I leave here, I'm going to go to meetings. You know, and thank God I got a rehab boyfriend, and he drove, so he would pick me up, and we would go to meetings together, and we sponsored each other, and he would drink and call me and tell on himself, and I'd be like, it's okay, we can do this, let's just go to a meeting tomorrow. He'd be like, okay, and then I'd call him the next day and be like, I failed, and he'd be like, it's okay, you can do it, come on, we're going to go to a meeting, you know, and it was like that for a couple months, you know, and I think just in the nick of time, you know, because I was getting that hopelessness and that itchiness and that restlessness, you know, it was creeping in me, like, very intensely, and I didn't think I could do it much longer, you know, and thank God I found the group of people that I've been sober with almost ever since. You know, I came in and out of meetings for another 3 months, going every day. I got a sponsor. I was talking to people in AA every day, you know, and the problem was I didn't understand I was going to have to change my life. You know, I didn't understand that getting sober meant I was going to have to change my entire life. You know, because I didn't just drink, you know. It wasn't just, like, just drinking. It was my way of living. I mean, that was, like, my lifeline, you know. And for me, I remember when it finally hit me that I was going to have to change my entire life. You know, I had just relapsed, if you will. Sorry. And I didn't understand what I'd done wrong, you know. I was with my parents, and I found a bottle of pills that I decided might be fun. And then I realized I was going to change my sobriety date, you know, after that. And I could have really gone either way. I mean, I could have not told people and just gone back to what I had been doing before. Or I could have, like, done something different for once and gotten honest. And by the grace of God, this girl had called me, and she said, I'm going to pick you up, but what I want you to do before I pick you up is write a list of all the secrets you've been keeping, all the things you've been doing that you haven't really been telling people about, or maybe the things that you might suspect are not helpful to your sobriety, you know, and I couldn't understand how she knew. It just was like, oh my God, you know, this girl is psychic, and she picked me up, and I had done it. You know, I was looking at this piece of paper, like, am I really going to do this? You know, and I just said a prayer. You know, I was like, God, please just help me be honest. You know, because as badly as it hurt to be sober, as badly as it hurt to, like, face a whole new world sober, you know, experience these emotions and this restlessness and, like, write it out without picking up a drink, which I had never done. You know, to just, like, walk through it, which I had never done. I mean, that was terrifying. You know, but what was more terrifying, thank God, by that point, was going back to the way I had been going. You know, and I think what had happened in those 3 months of coming in and out of meetings was I had gotten a little bit of hope, because I had never identified to anyone my entire life. I mean, I had never heard anybody describe the loneliness, the phenomenon of craving, the obsession, the way that my head just kind of, like, isolates me so badly, I need a drink. You know, or that I get so overwhelmed and just so anxious and restless, irritable, discontent, that I need a drink. You know, that there's nothing I can do or anyone can do to keep me from a drink. You know, the love of my family, boyfriends, friends, nothing kept me from drinking. I mean, I had never heard anybody describe it the way that they had described it. You know, and I felt like I'd found my mothership. You know, like, finally, these are my people. You know, and I wasn't completely sold on what they were doing to stay sober, you know, but that identification was enough for to get me to go back, you know, to get me to try something different, you know, just kind of that cross your fingers, maybe, just maybe. Maybe you're not too different, you know, maybe you're not too far gone. Maybe they will understand, you know, and thank God that I read that girl that list, you know, and I kind of snuck in there what I'd done with the pills, you know, and she said, I'm actually really impressed that you were so honest on that list. I was like, oh, thanks. You know, and I felt like that was the first compliment I gotten in so long, and I was excited. You know, I wanted to just try it, you know, and it wasn't anything anyone could have made me do. You know, it wasn't a decision I made with my sponsor, necessarily. I mean, this was something that I had to do between me and whatever my higher power is. You know, I had to, you know, because I realized I had nothing to lose. I had absolutely nothing to lose by trying this. You know, by trying what these people were doing, except walking through pain. And I had already been living in pain for so long at that point that it was just, like, customary. You know, it wasn't anything too shocking, and I was defeated enough that I was willing. You know, thank God. And what I had to do was I got a different sponsor only because, I don't know, you know, I really connected with this woman that I have today. I mean, I related to her, like, that language of the heart. You know, I trusted her, and I had never trusted anybody, you know, and it was really hard to kind of start to build that relationship with her. I mean, it took years, probably, you know, 2 years before I started, when I started sponsoring people is really when it changed, before I started to feel like she was really in my corner, you know, because I would take the actions of being honest. I would, like, take the actions. I would work the steps. I would tell her things because I didn't want to go back to the pain and the drinking that I had just come from, you know, but really, in the back of my mind, I didn't trust her for shit, you know what I mean? I felt like this woman is going to let me down because people let you down, you know, and my experience didn't suggest any of that whatsoever, you know, but my head, like I said, just wants me so lonely, wants to get me out of here so I can go drink again, you know, and thank God that for whatever reason, you know, I started just doing what my sponsor was doing. You know, she would tell me that we were going out of town for the weekend, and I would say, okay. And I didn't know where we were going or what we were doing, but I would get in the car and I would go. You know, she would pay for me to go to conferences. She would buy me lunch. You know, she would drive me home after meetings, and I didn't know where I lived. I didn't drive. I didn't know what I was doing. I had been, like, blacked out for that whole period where you learn where things are in your county, you know what I mean? I didn't know anything about anything, and we would get lost for a drive that should be 20 minutes, would take at least 2 hours, and she never once, I was so terrified because I knew, I didn't know where we were, I couldn't tell her that, she'd get mad, but she never even showed that she was upset, you know, I can only imagine how irritating that must have been, but she never once showed it, you know, and I would notice those things. I was watching people. I was, like, waiting for someone to just tell me to leave, waiting for someone to tell me I was stupid, that I was ugly, I shouldn't be here, go drink, you're not good enough, no one likes you. You know, I was waiting for that stuff. And the fact that people just constantly reinforced this love, you know, and they didn't want anything from me, it disgusted me so badly because it was so, you know, I just, like, I'd never known, like, human connection. I'd never known, like, love as an action. I'd never let it in or given it out before. It was so foreign and uncomfortable and gross, but, you know, it was, like, safe, you know, and I started to have my own experiences with, like, something working in my life, you know. Every few months, I would look back, and I would be, like, oh, my God, you know, if that hadn't happened, I wouldn't have ended up here. I wouldn't have ever done my 4-step. If we hadn't done this here, you know, I probably would have drank that night. If that girl hadn't picked me up, I would have called this guy to pick me up and drink. You know, and it was like I started to connect the dots that my higher power is very active and loving and working in my life. You know, but unfortunately, my higher power likes to work in hindsight, you know, so I have to kind of, like, be patient and trust, you know, on this. I just have faith that it is actively working. I just have the eyes of somebody very, very selfish and self-centered. I can never see it, you know, and I started to kind of file away these little experiences, you know, that not only did I have a God, but he was incredibly loving and taking care of me, you know, and I would come home from meetings and just hit my knees and cry because I was so grateful, you know, that it really did, I really didn't have to kill myself. You know, I had found what was going to work for me, you know, and it was just so overwhelming, and just, I was so grateful, you know, that God hadn't let me down, you know, that those nights laying on my floor, just like so dark and hopeless and empty, you know, just like, you better be there, you know what I mean, this better not be for nothing, that it wasn't, you know, and that I started to help people, you know, that I started to, I mean, I remember my sponsor's very, very active in service and helping others. She sponsors a ton of women, and she taught me that, you know, she led by example, and she would bring me with her to, like, 12-step people and to see how she talks to her sponsor. You know, she was very honest and open about what she did. She would show me her morning meditations and stuff like that. She didn't hide a thing, you know, and that taught me what to do, how to live, how to help people. I would go through the book with girls, and I would leave and just feel like that hole I've always been so painfully aware of was getting filled. You know, getting filled in a real and authentic way, not the fleeting, fabricated way that alcohol gave me, where I was just so concerned with it leaving, you know, that I would just be like an anxious, uncomfortable feeling. But this was like real, you know, and I didn't have to worry about it going away, you know, and I started to really have faith that I was gonna get better, you know, and all those demoralizing experiences, I started to be able to share with other women, you know, and I started to feel free of them, you know, and I started to make amends, you know, and like I had said, I mean, my relationship with my family was beyond destroyed. I mean, it took a very long time for that to get better. I came home one night after a year sober from a meeting, and my dad was like, let me check your breath, you know, and he thought I'd been drinking. You know, and that's what I had done to him. I mean, my mom still, I don't live with him anymore, but I did for like a year and a half of my sobriety, and my mom would still check on me every night. She would come in every night and just like look to make sure I was there, check to make sure that I was breathing, you know, because I would come home and my mom would see me like vomit all over me, you know, just passed out drunk, you know, and the things that I had done to them were just like, I had severely impacted their lives, you know, with the selfishness and the complete disregard for them, you know, and I started to become more and more aware of that, like, the longer that I was sober, and they started to feel comfortable sharing with me what I had done to them and how I had hurt them, you know, and my parents, I mean, my mom started to, she still does this, but she would go through this phase where we'd just be having dinner, family dinners, and she'd be like, remember that time that you punched me, that you punched me in the face and laughed while your grandma was in the room? And I was just like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, yes, you know, I do. And today I get to own it. I get to be different, you know, and I guess the good part about that is she doesn't say it because she wants to, like, well, I'm sure she wants to remind me so I never do anything like that again. But the fact that she feels like she can say that today without living in fear of my reaction, you know, I mean, that speaks volumes to the difference in our relationship, you know, because before, I mean, she couldn't look at me because I would react, you know, and things with my sister, I mean, she was the first direct amends I had made where I had sat her down and I had told her what I had done to her, you know, that I was going to try to be different and what I could do to make it right, you know, and I was terrified of that one. You know, I was very scared because she was hard to read. She was kind of just like in the background the whole time. Didn't say much, saw everything, didn't say much or do much, you know, and I was terrified because I didn't know what she knew. I didn't know how she felt. I didn't know if she even cared, you know, if it was even on her radar, you know, but she was very short about it. She was like, it's okay. Can you buy me a new iPod? And I said, I was like, sure, you know, and I got so mad because I'd go to these 9-step meetings where people were like sharing these profound experiences where like their life suddenly came back together and this one 9-step amends and they found God and they've never been the same since. And I'm like, what the hell? You know what I mean? Like, this isn't fair. I'm so sick. I need these cool experiences, burning bushes and white lights. And but what happened was a few weeks later, I mean, her friend, because we had a pool, so her friends would come over, and one of her best friends growing up, came up to me and she was like, did you say something to your sister? Like, is something different with you guys? And I was like, I don't know why. And she's like, she's just been so much lighter the last few weeks. It's like something in her has just like changed, you know? And it was like, I mean, I couldn't even like say anything, you know, because it just like, I could not even comprehend, for one, the damage I had done had affected her in a way that she was miserable, you know, and that the action of just even owning it and trying to be different had relieved her of whatever had been building up inside of her, you know, and that relationship has meant so much to me. You know, last week she had approached me with something that she had been keeping secret for, I assume, her whole life, you know, something that she felt like she couldn't share with anybody, you know, and she called me and told me she needed to tell me something, and she said, you're the only person that knows, other than her best friend and her girlfriend, which is what that was, and I was just like, I mean, because my immediate instinct is to pray, you know, because I know that I'm human. I know that I have my human reactions, my human emotions, you know, but I know that I have a higher power that is more concerned with her than me, you know, in a situation like that. I know that there's a higher power that just wants something good in that situation, you know, and I was able to pray and just, I mean, say what I needed to say to make her feel comfortable, to make her feel like it didn't matter, you know, that I was here for her, whatever, you know, and I was able to share with her even that I know what it's like to feel like no one understands, to feel like I have to hide who and what I am because I don't even understand it, you know, and I think that provided her a lot of comfort and a lot of relief, you know, because I'll never understand, you know, what she's going through specifically, you know, just that she'll never understand my alcoholism, you know, but I know that I've learned to show love, you know, I have learned to show it and feel comfortable with it. You know, I don't feel disgusted, like, hugging my dad. I don't feel like I'm going to throw up when my mom tries to kiss me on the cheek, you know, because I don't have anything to feel ashamed of, to feel disgusted about, you know, and that has been a freedom that I wouldn't trade for anything, you know, because my sobriety has been, I mean, my alcoholism is very alive and well, you know. I mean, even recently, I mean, I had been really praying and reaching out to try to expand my relationship with my God and really just struggling with being human, you know, with my defects of character and not liking them, you know, wanting to trade them off, you know, pick and choose who and what I am, you know, as if I have any control over that, you know, but it's just like my drinking, like the more I try to fix it, control it, manage it, the worse it gets, the more of a mess my life becomes, you know, and I had just been really praying for God to just draw me close. Please just bring me closer to you, you know, and for me, it's like when I really do try to start to align my will with God's, to open up to God and just draw near, it almost gets more uncomfortable before it gets better, you know, because it's like being rearranged inside of me, like when you have to clean your room, you know, for me, I have to like pull everything out, reorganize, put things back, you know, but for a little period of time, it's a bigger mess than it was when I started. You know, and that's how it feels inside when I'm really am trying to, like, grow, you know, grow towards God. It's not comfortable, you know, and that was a delusion that I had to have smashed, you know, that this would be a walk in the park, you know, that I would walk through everything with grace and dignity, that I would feel good, you know, that has been, like, I mean, I have been spoiled rotten by the effect alcohol had on me, by that kind of relief, you know, that nothing will ever compare to the way alcohol once made me feel. You know, so my expectations for feeling good are pretty high and pretty outrageous, you know, and I know for me, I need to be constantly getting out of self, constantly, you know, and it's very frustrating, you know, because my sponsor called it navel gazing. You know, I'll try to kind of like look in, you know, kind of examine that divine dissatisfaction, see what I need, where do I need to improve, you know, what's going to make me happy, where am I slacking, oh my God, I'm still in school, I don't want to live here, you know, I need a boyfriend, like all this stuff I'll start obsessing over and mulling over, you know, while I'm taking action sometimes. I mean, I'm very good at looking like I'm doing the deal, you know, turning these tools in Alcoholics Anonymous into selfish things to get what I want, or to just keep you impressed while I do what I want over here, you know what I mean? You know, to just keep you at ease while I just think about myself constantly, like smile and nod, thinking I'm helping people, putting them in my car, but thinking about myself the whole time. You know, and the problem is that my alcoholism is smarter than I am. You know, and before I know it, I want to drink. You know, for a while, I didn't want to drink. You know, probably like my first year, I would think of other creative ways to destroy my life or to hurt myself or punish myself or make you uncomfortable, you know, seek revenge and all these things that, but I didn't want to drink because I was terrified, you know, but something happened where none of that other stuff really appealed to me anymore. And when I became uncomfortable, a drink sounded like a really good idea, you know, and it had become so much more sneaky, you know, like I would just be clicking through Facebook pictures of old friends and I would be like, oh, they look like they're having so much fun. They used to drink like I drank. Why don't they look like a hot mess, you know, and all this stuff where I'm like, you know, but I would just have these thoughts while I'm just going about my day, not really tuning in, you know, and then before I know it, I'm like out of my mind, ready for some relief, you know, and it's always like, I don't know why I feel this way. I don't know what happened. You know, Joyce, help. What am I not doing, you know, but it's like in the inventory process, you know, that's why it's so imperative for me to be constantly looking at how I'm really living and what my motives really are, because my alcoholism has gotten so much more cunning, you know, and sneaky, you know, and it's like if I follow my tracks back, I mean, it always makes sense. I will not get struck drunk, you know, I will just be completely unaware, you know, and I mean, even recently I have felt like stuck in quicksand, you know, and that always happens when I'm just completely unaware, my head in the clouds, not paying attention to you, what you need, how you feel, what I can do to be useful, and before I know it, I'm sinking. I am sinking very fast, and the more I struggle, the faster I sink, and the only thing that is going to help me is to just stop fighting and ask for some goddamn help, you know, and it's incredible how easy it was to ask for help, you know, when I really felt like I needed it, when it was like my role to ask for help as a newcomer, you know, but to really, like, remember and hold on to that humility, you know, that I'm still alcoholic, if not more, you know, today, you know, and I still need help, and that I still need to continue to grow and enlarge my spiritual life, you know, but that doesn't have to be a dramatic, depressing, masochistic event, you know, I can just simply, you know, take a look at my defects of character, you know, get honest about them, and then turn my attention to you, you know, which is the most important part for me, you know, because when I'm busy, you know, just praying, not worrying about it, and helping you, it's like my problems seem to just get solved, you know, or at least distract me long enough until the right answer comes, you know, and then I know what I need to do, you know, and that has always been true for me, that, I mean, my faith is not just blind anymore. It has become experience, and that my higher power is experience. You know, that I don't have to just cross my fingers and ride off of what you tell me, that I know in my bones that this is my solution, that I have alcoholism. I'm just an alcoholic, and that I need to help other alcoholics, and that my higher power is very active in my life. You know, so thank you guys so much for having me here, and thank you.